Today on the broadcast, we got a couple of gentlemen who were kind of, you might say, passing through our community, and they've got a very special event which is coming up tonight. We're going to be talking about that in just a moment. It is my great, great pleasure to welcome to the microphone today Bob Wooten. Bob, God bless you, and I thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm really proud to be here.
And I have on my right-hand side here W.S. Holland.
Our pleasure to be here.
And you might be saying to yourself right now, well, who are W.S. Holland and Bob Wooten? You might know them better as the Tennessee Three, longtime band backing up Johnny Cash in concerts everywhere. W.S. Holland, I believe you were Johnny's drummer from 1960 until he retired in, what, 1997?
That is correct. I believe you know as much about us as we do.
I can only say thank God for the internet. I've been digging a little bit. And Bob, you're kind of the new guy on the team. You didn't join till what, 1968, right before the San Quentin concert?
Yeah, well, it's 1968 when Luther passed away. He got burned real bad in a house fire. He's John's original guitar player that started all this. And he passed away in August of 68, and I went to work in September.
Now, you gentlemen are two of the Tennessee Three, and I guess basically you played with Johnny in just about everything he did, recording sessions. You were both part of the television show, I assume?
Oh, yeah, from 1960 when I joined the group. Did pretty well everything that he did. And then, and like Bob said, when he joined in 1968, I don't know, we had John fooled pretty bad. It just seemed like he couldn't do anything without us.
In fact, what was the story that I read on the internet? And I kind of compared some of the stories, and you said, well, some of them are true and some of them aren't, W.S. Something about John hired you in 1960, and he decided he wanted you to be his drummer for life. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's I actually met John back in 1955. 5 years before I joined the group, I started in the business with Carl Perkins in 54, and then went over to Sun Records in Memphis and met Sam Phillips and did the Blue Suede Shoes with Carl, and this was in the 55 now, and John and Jay Lee and Roy and Elvis and Sonny Burgess and a list of 8 or 10 had come along with that time.
For those folks who are a little bit older, they kind of know the story of Sun Records and Sam Phillips, and that was the beginning of, as you mentioned, Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and you were the man who played on what was called the Million Dollar Quartet when the four of them got together and recorded one day?
Yeah, that was actually a Carl Perkins recording session. We was doing Matchbox. And Jerry Lee Lewis was hired to play piano on it with us. If you listen real good, you can tell it's Jerry Lee. And we was in Memphis doing that, and John and Elvis was home, and they just dropped by the studio. So when they dropped by the studio, it was turned into a jam session, and we didn't realize anything would ever become of it at that time. And I kidded Sam Phillips later, if he'd have just had any idea what was going on, he could have had the cameraman to pan around about another 2 feet, and I'd have been anything. It really would have been famous. But that's where I met John, and all the bands worked together, like 150-mile radius of Memphis. And then in 1960, John, at that time, two of his biggest bookings, one of the biggest concert, biggest buildings, I guess, that he played, was in Syracuse, New York, and in Atlantic City at Steel Pier, and he just had the two musicians, like Bob said, Luther Perkins and Marshall Grant. So I think he figured he needed to make more noise for those big buildings, so he called me to go for those 2 weeks to play drums with him, and at that time I was thinking about quitting the music business, just getting married, and my wife at that time wanted me to quit music business. I don't know why I didn't listen to her, but for some reason I didn't. So I went for those 2 weeks, and I was going to go back home and go to work with the city doing a job, and I don't know why, but for some reason everything seemed to work really good. And about the middle of the week, on the second week, John said, hey, let's talk about you working with me. And I told him I was fixing to go to work, get a regular job. He said, well, this is working so good, I'd like for you to stay with me and play every show and do every record. Everything I do from now on, I'd like to have you in the group. I said, well, that sounds like a regular job. So that 2 weeks turned into nearly 40 years.
The reason we're visiting today with WS and Bob is they are both in town tonight. They're holding a benefit concert at the New Hope Community Church in Clovis. That's located at 4620 East Neist Avenue. I've got a pastor from the church across the room. That's just east of Clovis Avenue, right?
Between Clovis and Sunnyside.
Between Clovis and Sunnyside on Neist Avenue. And the gentlemen are there. It's basically the Tennessee 3 minus 1, right?
Well, we've got a five-piece band, you know, so we still call it Tennessee 3 because we're just leaving the space open for Marshall, who retired, you know, and so we're not, it's not really a third member. We just call everybody the Tennessee 3.
It's kind of like some of the old gospel records I see at the radio station. I pull that out, and it'll say the such-and-such quartet, and there's six people in it.
Right, right. At one time, we had eight members in John's band, you know, and they still, Jan Howard was on the show, and she said, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Tennessee 3, 4, 5, 6, 7." Started counting us. Threw up her hands and left the stage.
That's funny stuff. You're playing tonight at 7 o'clock, New Hope Community Church in Clovis. It is a free concert. You can't beat that, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about living legends in the music business. It's a free concert. There will be an offering received after the concert. This is a benefit for, of all things, to build a new sound system for the chapel at San Quentin Prison. And San Quentin is something you two gentlemen know one or two things about, right?
Yes, it's close to our heart, you know. When I first went to work with John in 68, we started working on an album called Hello, I'm Johnny Cash, because when he did the thing in Folsom, that was got to be such a famous introduction, you know, so he decided to name an album after it. And about halfway through, we went to San Quentin, and on the way out, he wrote a song called San Quentin, and a guy named Shel Silverstein wrote a poem and left it back, you know, sent it backstage to him, and John read it backstage before the show, and we laughed and thought that was the end of it. But he ran out of material on the stage, you know, to get the guys all fired up. He said, "Bob, give me my briefcase." And I got it for him. You can hear him shuffling through the papers. He said, "Oh, here it is." And he starts doing the poem again. We just start playing music. 7 million copies. You know, that's not bad for my first record.
That was something called A Boy Named Sue, right?
Yeah, that's right, A Boy Named Sue.
And, of course, that's the famous song, a big, big top 10 hit in 1970. I remember as an 18-year-old on all the radio stations. And there was a section near the end of the song where they bleep something out. And this is a Christian radio station. Can you share with us what it was they bleeped out?
No, sir.
Something about a church-going son of a gun, right? Something like that?
And I want to let everybody know that what we do is a family thing. There's no insinuations, no dirty talking, you know, I mean, and no loud screaming stuff, you know. We just do things that you can bring your little kid or your grandmother to, so...
This is a benefit concert, as I mentioned, to build a new get a new sound system put together at the chapel at San Quentin Prison. You folks were brought to Clovis here by Joe Avila of Prison Fellowship, and Joe is standing over there across the room, too. Say hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
say goodnight, Dick. And when you were first approached about this, what did you think of it? You have, obviously, great memories of San Quentin playing there.
Well... It was something that I couldn't believe was happening. Actually, the whole thing with Bob and me is just so exciting. It's unreal. And we're so glad that we're lucky enough to come do things like this to help people. We thought that in 97, when John retired, that the music business was over for us. So we started to find some other things to do, to buy some groceries and gas. So gas got so high, we figured we were going to have to do something else. So... It was
going back to getting that real job.
That's right. It's so weird that I didn't realize, and of course Bob knew it, but he was about the only person, him and his family knew, that he sang actually better than John Cash. So we get together one day saying, "Hey, let's make a CD." So we did. We made this little CD called We Still Miss Someone, put a song in it that Bob had done, and then some Johnny Cash songs, and even did a drum solo thing that my wife had been trying to get me to do for 40 years.
All the rock and roll acts had followed you. They all did drum solos, so why not?
That's right. So it just kind of took off. A boy owned a record company, heard it, and wanted to work with it, and it really did things, you know, we didn't think about it happening. So that's the main reason we're able to be here, is getting together and do that little CD, mostly for the fun of it. And so that's why we are so excited. And it's enough has happened for us to be able to stop at places like this and do benefits and help, you know, however we can. And we're glad to do it.
Great. WS mentioned something about you singing better than Johnny, and I guess there's a story from back when you were a young man, and your mama thought she heard you on the radio one day. Is that a true story?
Well, he won't say that, but I can.
Well, my dad taught me to play guitar because he played guitar in Maryland and stuff, and when my mother was carrying me, he said he prayed that God would send him somebody to play music with. So because he wanted to play the mandolin. And so I grew up in church playing the guitar and him playing the mandolin, you know, and him singing. And I mean, it was something that I lived for because, I mean, I was having such a great time. And then when Johnny Cash came along, but I always had a deeper voice when I was a kid than the kids my age. And and I was playing the guitar on the back porch one day, and my mother was cooking supper, and she called me in. She said, "Come in here, Robert." She said, "That sounds like you on the radio." And I went in, and it was Johnny Cash doing "I Walk the Line," all that you know, and the low notes and changing keys, you know, up and down. And it's just really strange how it happened. And we're fortunate WS's wife, Joyce, is with us. My wife plays the guitar and kind of manages us on the road. And then I have a daughter that's 21 that sings and plays, and I have an 8-year-old that comes out and does some stuff. And then we have a lady named Lisa Horngren that plays bass, and she is fired up. She's a great bass player. I mean, really, really, really good.
From the information I've seen, you folks, you're going to be doing some traditional gospel tunes as well as maybe a song or two from the Johnny Cash songbook?
Yeah, well, they told us to just come and do what you normally do, and we normally do some gospel, so we're going to do, you know. I really think if everybody comes with an open mind, I mean, I feel kind of funny. John played some churches, you know, and I thought, I mean, you're going to go into church and do Boy Named Sue, you know? But fortunately, I don't do that one. We do a lot of the old stuff because I love the stories. I probably shouldn't say it, but I'll go ahead since I started. It's like listening to the words of John's early songs and son, I can tell when he wrote that song if he was fighting with his wife or not. It's just that well written and simple, you know. And some of the songs, you know, you can just tell he's really hurting. I just love the old stuff, you know. We do Sunday Morning Coming Down, you know, of course, and some other things that I think everybody comes to find at least one or two things they like. So if they do, then we've done what we came to do.
Does it surprise either one of you gentlemen, having spent, I did my math and I calculated between the two of you, you spent 66 years backing up Johnny Cash. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
One of the buses wore out that we got. We've got John's old bus too, you know.
Oh, really? Is that's John's bus sitting out there?
That's it. That's the one he had for, what, 17 years he traveled on that thing.
Yeah, well,
he ever had.
He bought it new in 79, had it built in 80, and he used it until 97.
Wow.
Yeah, and a friend of ours, well, it had been sold three times. And this last time, a person up in Ohio bought it, named Dave Wright, and he found out that we was touring, and he wanted us to have the bus. So we're going to try to finish wearing it out.
As long as the bus lasts, you'll be on the road.
Yeah, we figure that's a good advertisement for the bus company. It wore out several people, and it's not going to wear Bob and me out.
Tear
it up.
It's taking a licking, but it's still ticking, right?
That's right, exactly right.
Are either one of you surprised by the, of course, in your case, WS, you were back there at Sun Records with both Elvis and Johnny Cash. Could you ever, ever foresee how the two of them would completely turn popular culture and country music on its head?
No, at that time when we was recording in the mid-50s and playing the at that time, there were shows around different parts. Now they're concerts. I don't know how it got changed, but but no, nobody ever thought it. Nobody ever thought a year in advance of what was happening. It's just something that I guess the country boy Tennessee way of saying it. The man upstairs made it happen. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew. Had any idea. And then backup musicians like Bob and me, I mean, even later, like years later, we never thought that we'd be sitting here talking to you and telling people that we're going to be performing in this town and them come see us. That wasn't even in the realm of reality.
WS, what do you think when you see on the internet some people have made the evaluation that you were the very first rock and roll drummer in history?
That feels so funny, so good. The only problem with all these things that happened so many years ago that we think is great now, no young people used to do that. You got to get old before that happens. So I don't know if it's good or not.
If you can't be 29, right, and do what we've done.
If you live long enough, people rediscover you, right?
Yeah, that's what happened. But, you know, like he's talking about playing in the church and doing different songs. On all of our shows we do, if it's a truck bed in Mississippi or a casino or whatever, we try to close out with a song that's a hymn or sounds kind of like a hymn. And the drum playing thing, you know, for so many, many years, it seemed to me like, you know, that I shouldn't be playing drums in a church. And actually, when I got with John, you know, he worked everywhere. He worked churches or wherever. And it felt kind of like it wasn't a thing to do for so long. But in the last, few years, every church you see now has got a drum set in the church. So I don't know if I helped cause that to happen or not. Maybe I did.
Well, yeah, I guess, again, if you go back, if you trace the history in your work with Carl Perkins and Sun Records and everything, I guess that was a revolutionary concept, having drums in country music, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, when I carried this set of drums over to Memphis in 1954, nobody had drums. Elvis didn't have drums, and none of the groups had drums. And country music had like a thump guitar doing rhythm, and it was all called country. But for some reason, when I went over there and we did the Blue Suede Shoes record, and then of course Elvis did it after that, it got changed to rock and roll. So I guess I just messed up a lot of things here.
Yeah, of course, we've known it as rock and roll for 50-plus years now, but when you were playing it, what kind of music did you think it was? I guess rock and roll was kind of a blend of, what, rhythm and blues and country and folk, and what did you think you were doing back then?
We really didn't know. Like, Sam Phillips was smart enough to let everybody come in there just do what they do, instead of the way people do. A new artist coming in the record business today, they tell them what they think they ought to do, what they ought to wear, how they ought to look, and
of course you have to have a choreography routine, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. And that wasn't the way it was then. He just let people do the only thing they knew to do, and it just everything that was done over there, the sound was a different sound that people had heard. Nobody had ever heard anything like Elvis and Scotty and Bill when they went in and did their songs. Nobody ever heard anything like Jerry Lee Lewis. Nobody ever heard anything like Carl Perkins. But of all of them, the Johnny Cash style that his band made was more different than any of them. And still today, the guitar sound that Bob does today is... That's still a distinctive sound that you don't hear with anybody else doing.
Yeah, that's I guess what it's kind of what the rockabilly sound, right?
Yeah, and John was always smart enough to realize that sound his band made was really important, and that's the reason he had that sound with him on every stage show he did from 1955 till 1997.
Very unique sound. Bob, in any of the times that, I'm not sure how many times that John and June played Billy Graham Crusades, did you two get to back them up on those events?
Oh, yeah, we went to several of them, and people like, we did some stuff with Oral Roberts and what's the guy up in Cincinnati, or, and Robertson, James Robertson, we did stuff for him, and Hubbard, is it Hubbard?
Rex Humbard?
Rex Humbard. We did a lot of stuff with him.
Really?
He had us on one of his plane one night, and we landed right in the middle of a tornado. John June got off and went to the hotel and went to bed. We got back on the plane and left. They said we were crazy. I said, well, it's Rex Humbard. He knows the Lord, and we do too, so maybe we'll make it.
Connections, right?
Yeah.
What was it like, as opposed to playing what you said shows, and then it became highfalutin, they started calling it concerts at some point? What was it like playing a Billy Graham crusade, as opposed to maybe playing a show at the municipal auditorium?
Well, the Billy Graham thing, we normally got to do like two songs, you know. And the other place, we'd do 2-hour show and a lot of screaming and hooping and hollering, which they didn't do at the church. We got a lot of applause and stuff, but not what you would get at a Coliseum, you know, with a bunch of folks.
Of course, the way things have come around now, and Johnny Cash being such a towering figure with people probably from their 90s down to people in their teen years, I wouldn't be surprised if you had a lot of people showing up tonight and whooping and hollering and screaming there.
You know, that's what was happening at the end of John's career there. It was so weird because the last 4 or 5 years, he had got into a thing of the young people coming to see him again, like the teenagers and up to 25, 30 years old, and it was like we were starting over again. It was really weird, and so that's kind of what's happening with Bob and me now. We've been playing some things that a lot of teenagers are coming to, and it's like that I'm sitting up here looking out at this audience with some young people. I think, wait a minute now, those kids' parents was standing out there looking at me, and here they are. I can't imagine what they think. You know, why don't that old guy go home, or hey, it's great, he's still able to do that, or, you know, it's amazing to see it happen.
I'll go ahead and say it. Some of them's grandkids.
We won't touch great-grandkids, will we?
No, but we do. We have a very diverse audience. You know, we have people, you know, kids from 3 or 4 years old, or, you know, and up to grandma and grandpa's, you know, and all in between, and they all seem to have a ball. And the thing that amazes me the most, people come to me and say, you know, I closed my eyes, and I just knew that Johnny Cash would stand up on that stage, and I just can't believe that you guys sound just like John, you know. And I mean, I've had them come to me crying, say, you know, I never got to go to a Johnny Cash show, but now I feel like I've been.
Yeah.
You know? It makes me feel funny, you know. But we feel like John would be proud and supportive of what we're doing. I really do. I mean,
well, the great thing about you two gentlemen is you're not recreating a Johnny Cash show, because if you saw a Johnny Cash show anytime up through 1997, you were there.
Well, actually, what Bob and me are doing, we are just trying to continue on what we have done. The only thing we're doing different is Bob is singing the songs, and we're just doing the same thing that we have done all this many years. And when he made the statement about the great grandkids coming, when the great great grandkids starts coming, I'm going to consider retiring.
Perhaps not. One thing I also read about you, W.S., in addition to your early formation there of being maybe the first rock and roll drummer, you caught the attention of a young man who was a drum aficionado over in the British Isles back about the late 50s or early 60s, and I guess he was kind of an influence on you. He went on to a moderately successful career in a band called what, the Beatles?
Yeah, Ringo. I've heard it said that kind of influenced what he did. I hope so. I know me and him both learned one thing, and the main thing, we both learned how to play a long time. if we didn't learn to play very good, we learned to play a long time. So I'm proud of that.
That's the key. Again, I'm visiting with Bob Wooten and W.S. Holland, longtime members of the Tennessee Three, Johnny Cash's backup band. They are going to be in concert tonight at the New Hope Community Church in Clovis. That's at 4620 East Nice, right in between Clovis Avenue and Sunnyside. And it's a free concert. I mean, you can't beat free to see a couple of living legends. Does it make you feel uncomfortable to be called living legends, gentlemen?
A little, yeah, because that means you're getting older. But we're tickled to death to be here, and we hope we get a good turnout and get some money and get this thing done. And we want to go back to San Quentin and do another show.
And if we don't do something that somebody likes, just holler and let us know. We'll try to do it.
So you will be taking requests then?
Yeah, if that's what it takes for us to do something they like, we will.
So somebody wants to hear "The One on the Left Is on the Right"?
No.
We'll make up something. Yeah, we'll have to make it up as we go.
It is a benefit concert taking place tonight at the New Hope Community Church. It's a benefit for San Quentin Prison for a new sound system for the chapel there. And these gentlemen have a warm spot in their heart for San Quentin, because that's where they backed up Johnny in the fabulously successful Johnny Cash at San Quentin album back about 1970.
Let me tell you why this is so important to us and something that we feel about real strong. The audience at the prisons we played, San Quentin and Folsom, the audience reaction is one of the things that I think, and me and some more people think, that made John Cash skyrocket to stardom. And you know, it's weird, when the first time we went out there, the record promoter was talking about doing it, and a boy named Bob Johnson was going to go be the producer of it. And I remember saying, hey, it won't sell enough records to pay for the tape. So you see what I knew about music back then. And it was the thing that skyrocketed John Cash into stardom. Don't you believe that?
It certainly helped. It moved him into a whole new area. Case in point, I was a 17-year-old teenager in 1969, and a department store was having a sale on albums. I think they were selling them for $2.99, and that was a great deal back then. And I went and bought Jimi Hendrix, I went and bought the Beatles, and I went and bought Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison at 17 years old.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you know, if that hadn't happened, if we hadn't went and did that at that time period, we wouldn't be here doing it today. So it was a very important part of it, and a very important part of our life, to be able to go back this many years later and do what we do.
That was a great thing about radio broadcasting back in the 50s and the 60s, is you would turn on your music station and you could hear an incredible variety of artists. You could hear the Beatles, you could hear the Rolling Stones, you'd hear Frank Sinatra, you'd hear Nat King Cole, you'd hear James Brown, you'd hear Johnny Cash. And it seems like in the last 30 years we've gotten away from that, to where you only hear one type of music on one station.
That's right, and after about an hour or so, they start playing the same ones over. But I've told my daughter, she's 21, Scarlett, I said, when I was a kid, you had a radio station. You could hear Frank Sinatra, you could hear Elvis, you could hear Gene Autry, you know. And nowadays, like you're talking about, you get on one channel and that's all you hear, nothing but oldies or nothing but the new country or nothing but old country. I mean, there should be a variety, so you don't have to keep changing stations, you know. But I liked it when it was just the radio station,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I feel blessed to be an old guy in my 50s to growing up in the 1960s. Thank you, WS. But you know one thing I envy you about? I saw your pictures on the internet, and it's true here in person. You've kept all your hair all these years.
Well, it's going away pretty fast now, though.
Not as fast as mine has. It is W.S. Holland and Bob Wooten, the Tennessee Three, backing up Johnny Cash for the longest time. And they're going to be doing some traditional gospel songs. They're going to be doing some Johnny Cash songs. And as Bob indicated, it is all very family friendly.
Yes, sir. Very friendly.
It's taking place tonight at the New Hope Community Church on Nice Avenue in Clovis. That's in between Clovis and Sunnyside, just east of Clovis Avenue. It gets underway at 7 o'clock tonight. Again, admission is free. There will be an offering received to help build that new sound system at the chapel at San Quentin Prison. The good folks at Prison Fellowship helped piece this all together, and I certainly hope it's an incredible success. Gentlemen, where do you go from the Central Valley? Where does your tour take you next?
We are going from here up to Salem, Ohio. Down to Salem, Ohio. We're going up to Salem, Oregon, and see, if it wasn't for Bob, his wife, and my wife, and a couple of more people, we'd be lost. I don't even know what direction I'm going in.
That's why Jesus sent the disciples out in twos, right?
And then we're leaving there and heading east, going, you know, stopping, doing is it Kansas City? We're doing a show, and in some place
in Claremore at the Will Rogers Downs, in Claremore, Oklahoma, and then from there over to Mount Vernon, Missouri. Then we're going over to Dias, Arkansas, where Johnny was born, taking his bus. They're starting a program to try to build a monument to Johnny Cash. All these years, there's not a monument to him in his hometown. So that's what they want to do, and we wanted to be a part of it, so we're going by there. Let them take pictures of us in the bus and talk, and a big publicity blast they're going to start, you know, to try to raise money to do a monument. And then later on this year, we're going to do a show, us and Tommy Cash, and I think Marty Stewart's going to be on it, and probably Roseanne. We're going to have a big, big show there and raise money and build a monument to somebody that deserves one.
That's terrific.
See, Bob does a lot of the driving, so he has to know where we're going better than I do. So then we're going to work our way back to home in Tennessee the 18th, I think.
You and Bob's best friends are Randon McNally, right?
That's true. If it wasn't for Mr. McNally, we couldn't go anywhere.
We'd probably still be somewhere between here and L.A.
If you want to hear the music of W.S. Holland and Bob Wooten, basically just pick up any Johnny Cash project from the last 40 years. And you gentlemen have a website if you want to hear the new CD you've done.
Yeah, Tennessee.com?
Yes, www.tennessee, not the Tennessee, but Tennessee3.com.
Let me tell you what they're going to be able to hear. Bob's daughter, who really sings pretty. They're not going to have to hear just Bob singing and me playing drums. They're going to have to hear her sing some pretty song.
It's Tennessee3.com. Is that the number three or the word three?
The word three.
Okay. Tennessee, word three, Tree.com for Bob Wooten and W.S. Hall. And gentlemen, I thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to visit with me today. Hope to see you there tonight, and it's going to be a great show at the New Hope Community Church.
Looking forward to seeing you.
Thank you. We're going to be there with bells on, as they say.